This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz people with ties to New Mexico, like singer Chris Calloway.
Hey folks, here's a story about Minnie LaMoo. She was a low-down hoochie-coochie. She was the wolf's toughest frail. Minnie had a heart big as a whale.
Singer and actress Chris Calloway knows about shadows and light. As one of the daughters of the late world-renowned bandleader and singer Cab Calloway, of Minnie the Moocher and Heidi Ho Orchestra fame, Chris has lived part of her life in his long shadow, part of it trying to escape from that shadow, and she says frankly, part of her life trying to shine a light on her dad's legacy. In addition to managing the difficult emotional terrain of being a celebrity daughter, Chris has also been challenged by cancer, the death of her only son to complications from drug addiction, and recurring bouts of depression. But the light-drenched landscapes of New Mexico and her music have proved to be healing tonics for Chris Calloway. She told Mark Weber that when her stage performance as Billie Holiday brought her to New Mexico in 1993, she sensed something right away.
Well, my rapport with the audience was always very intimate. And I had benchmarks in the dialogue that I could kind of like gauge what type of audience I had that night by how they reacted to a certain segment of the play. And every audience that I had in Santa Fe, the feeling was that they were just so open-hearted. There was so much compassion in the audience collectively. I just literally fell in love. And that was in June. I came back in, I guess it was August, and I moved in September.
Wow.
And I've been there ever since.
So it was a people thing more than a landscape thing.
Well, people, but the land too. You know, I mean, when I came, you know, Santa Fe's got all that kind of like woo-woo stuff. Everybody's...
and you like that.
You know, seeing aliens. Well, no, I was like, you know, look, come on, I'm from New York, okay? You know, cut me some slack. But as life goes, and as we as humans respond emotionally up and down, I had some down times that were kind of intense, and the experience turned out to be one, like, if I had a downtime in New York, I mean, you could hit that pavement, and it was brutal. You know, depression in New York is just hard. And I ran into a dark time in Santa Fe, and it was just kind of like started heading for the ground. And right, just metaphorically, right before I, you know, smashed into what I thought was the pavement, it was like these arms just reached out and caught me and then just gently laid me on the ground, which did a couple of things. It kind of took the fear away from entering the darkness. And it also let me go through the darkness to get to the other side, you know, without breaking my jaw or eating concrete or, you know, being homeless on this. New York is just hard and cold. Hmm. And over the years, I've kind of gotten a little more in tune with the energy that is Santa Fe, that has worked very positively and very healing and very constructively for me.
What do you learn from being depressed?
Well, now I learned that it's an exercise in surrender, that this too shall pass. I've been doing a little Buddhist meditation, and you sit there, and it's a great exercise because, oh, my knee hurts. It's like, let it go. And next thing you know, it's gone. And it's kind of like taught my little brain that, you know, the energies of life come and go. The light comes, the dark comes, the up comes, the down comes. And so now I've been able to, through spiritual practice and energies and really doing a lot of reading and working and practicing, I can get depressed and just, honey, just be about as depressed as anything you have ever seen and just be all in it. It's just like, why avoid it? And I know that it will pass. And I also know that the universe adores me and supports me, and that it's not a punishment in any way, and that the darkness is really my humanness in trying to come to terms with the fact that I believe I'm a spiritual being. And in this three-dimensional world, it can get real confusing about stepping into my spiritual essence and living my life from that. You know, a faith that is like, well, where do the leaves come from? You know what I'm saying? It was kind of like, okay, it's February and there's like no leaves on the tree. All right, now it's April and there's leaves. So what, somebody paste them on there? You know what I mean? It's like this spontaneous burst of genius that happens every single time. Day follows night every single day. So there's something right. There's something working. There's something in place. So why would I think that I'm like the only one that's out of place? Well, you know, the universe is fine except for you, Chris. You know, you are a real mess. And I've embraced my humanness. I've embraced my darkness. Because on the other side of it is really the light that I've been looking and yearning and needing and searching for.
Reminds me of that phrase, religion is for people who are scared of hell, and spirituality is for people who have been to hell.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah. That'll definitely work.
So it sounds like you had to almost go back and rewire yourself.
Well, I actually last year I had a recurrence of breast cancer, and I have been actually kind of dancing a dance with breast cancer since 1989, 88. I just never took it seriously, you know. I just never took it seriously. I just thought, okay, fine, whatever. Give me the pills, do what you have to do, and I'll go on my way. Last year, it kind of reached, you know, critical mass, and we were due for some chemotherapy. And that was pretty intense. Oh, I'm going to die. You know, like on the, oh, God, I'm going to die. This is so terrible. My cancer's back. I'm going to die. You know, the little voice in my head said, and? And I'm like, but you don't understand. I'm sick. I have cancer. I'm going to die. And the little voice goes, and? I was like, don't mock me. Please don't mock me. This is so scary. The voice goes, I am so not mocking you. I am telling you, of course, you are going to die. What do you think? You're going to get out of here alive? Life is a terminal disease. There's no. So the question then becomes, Chris, how are you going to live? And what kind of value are you going to place on each and every moment? How are you going to see your relationships? What is going to be your value in the world? What have you contributed? What have you added? What do you give? Is your heart open? Are you compassionate? Are you forgiving? Because I believe that those are the things that are eternal. Those are the things that are about my soul and my spirit and will go with me all along. If I'm going to go to hell, it's a place where no one will forgive me.
How do you explain to young people who your dad was?
Now Joe, you slide, you give his one to use and live. Beef to the stud on your ride. He thinks he's hip, but ain't his jive is out of date. Hip him so he can get mellow. Jive, study, jive. It's the race drive. To lay jive. It's the grave to lay your jive. To be hip, beat your chops and lay your jive, then you'll be hip.
Cab Calloway used to get on the stage in full dress tails that were lime green or canary yellow with matching shoes. And he was just Dapper Dan. There's no question about it, you see. And of course, his dance moves, you know, I've got films of him at the Zanzibar Cafe in New York City in, you know, 1939 doing the moonwalk. He is and was the original Elvis Presley. He is and was the original Michael Jackson. He was the original frontman, the original Mick Jagger, that didn't play an instrument, but totally commanded the attention and controlled the audience all the way.
Now to study, jive, and be hip, tell you what you got to do. You got to turn right over on the other side.
This is a very interesting CD, and it's called Cab Easy. And, you know, Cab Calloway is a famous scatter, and he was known for all of his jittery, jittery, jittery. This is Cab Calloway in the sweetest of sweetness. This is a mellow, sweet, to be able to really hear the kind of tenor voice that this man had. That's what this tune is.
I see a million people, but all I can see is you. I hear a million voices, but only your voice comes through. I wait for your footsteps, I've waited before. I know that it's you, if you knock on the door. I know you're around by the sound of my pounding heart.
What did you learn from working with your father so many years?
Well, I didn't know what I was learning when I was learning it. I learned professionalism. I learned respect for my job. I learned respect for my audience. I learned respect for the musicians. I learned that, you know, the old adage, the show must go on. And I could never quite really understand that. You know, it seemed like an austerity to me. It's like, well, I have pneumonia and a temperature of 104. You mean I have to go do the show? It's like, yeah. And there, slowly but surely, I'm learning how liberating that is. How, again, if I turn it over and I go into the zone, it's fine. My dad used to, every now and then we would work. We worked the Fairmont hotels all over the United States, and back in the day with the Playboy clubs and stuff. So we would work with pickup bands a lot. And some of the times we'd take a piano player as an MD, musical director, or some of the times we'd take a drummer as an MD, musical director, to hold the band together. Every now and then we would just go solo. And there were just so many times my dad would walk in to this rehearsal, and you've got musicians that are just limp because it's Cab Calloway. This is a dream. I'm going to play for Cab Calloway. Oh, my God. And he would put the music down in front of them. He would not talk it over. He would not show them A, B, C, where the coda was, where the sign was. He would count the tempo off. And the first tune was always like this. Fast little booger. And I thought, that is so mean. How could he be so mean? These guys are so smitten. And he is just being a bitch, okay? And it wasn't until way late in my career that I understood what he was doing. It's kind of like, and there would be times when the band would start at the top and meet him at the end and not miss a note. There were other pickup bands that could get 8 bars into the tune and were just completely lost. That way he knew what kind of band he had to work with, which automatically indicated what his energy could be and where he was going to be. If you've got a poppin' band, you put the music down in front of them and they read it like a menu, you know that as the front man, as the singer, well, hell, you can just have a good old time. This is going to be fun, because you say, you guys are going to blow back there and I'm going to blow up here. But if you know you've got a draggy-ass, tired band, folks can't read and they're just a little skittish, then you've got to be paying almost as much attention to the band and keeping them on track as you are about your performance. I think the importance of respecting your audience. You know, I mean, his whole thing was you never turn your back on your audience. That is like extremely old-fashioned. And yet at the same time, I understood the premise of it. And, you know, he would say to me, You can't turn your back on your audience like that. Don't ever do that again. I was like, oh, okay. And I said, well, but, you know, I have to turn around. He said, no, you don't. He said, the audience is there, and if they weren't there, you wouldn't be there. You owe everything to your audience. Everything. When he was on the stage, it was life or death. It was life or death on the stage for him. So that energy, that drive, that focus, that zone, that's what I was aspiring to. When we worked together, and you talk about being in between a rock and a hard place. I mean, a 70-year-old Cab Calloway would come out and charm the audience four or five numbers, and then he'd introduce his daughter. Well, honey, you better have something to say. You better be able to hold your own. So because his energy was always up here, I was always trying to equate his energy up there. It's taken me years to get over that, so that now that I have my own energy.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart, you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never can go so well. But darling, why should I resist when I know so well I've got you under my skin. Sacrifice anything come what might for the sake of having you near. In spite of that warning voice that repeats in the night, it repeats and repeats in my head. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. Cause I've got you under my skin.
I believe that creativity is divine. And that it is, it, and that we as artists are the channels that are able amongst the multitudes to be able to hold that thrush of divinity that comes through and enables us to touch people's lives, make them feel. And the joy, and I think it's more about joy now than anything else, the joy is what heals. The music is what heals because it comes through the artist. I would never pretend to be great. I mean, you know, I have clothes all over my bed. I have dishes in my sink. I mean, my car is dirty, and I can be a real bitch. You know, so people see me on the stage, and they go, oh, my God, you're fabulous. Oh, you're wonderful. Oh, you're so thin. You've just really lifted me up, and blah, 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 blah. Not hardly, honey, okay? What I've learned, and this has only been in the last 5 or 6 years, is that before I open my mouth to sing, I do a prayer, and I ask, I call forth spirit and ask to be used as a vehicle for the highest good. No pressure on me. Let them only see spirit, God, light, joy, love, and not me. And then when people say, oh my God, you're so wonderful, I can say, thank you very much. I'm thanking them because I'm acknowledging the fact that I'm the channel and that I'm a fabulous channel. I mean, I can hold that stuff forever. You know, give me 3,000 people and a trio, and I'm your girl.
Like a song on the wind in the trees, that's how my heart is singing, Gigi. Happy Gigi, when you're with me.
you. Don't you know, Shinji, I'd be running and searching for you like a rebel I can't fancy. That would be me without you.
Singer Chris Calloway. She talked with Mark Weber, and there's lots more online at newmexicojazz.org. Chris talks about working with young singers and how to gauge the skill of a backing band, plus more stories about her dad, Cab Calloway, all at newmexicojazz.org, where all these jazz profiles are stored. Funding from the New Mexico Humanities Council and Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. I'm Paul Ingalls.